program you're about to hear involves slack confidence, disparity, satire, and comedy. Any reference to Bob, the church, genius, religion, politics, or any other touchy subjects is intended only as humor and should cast no reflection on the high standards of WREK Atlanta, its staff, or that of Georgia Tech.
Oh, Seekers, welcome to a brand new year of Bob's Slacktime Funhouse. Oh, the very last year if we in the Church of the Subgenius have our way. Oh, and tonight I have such a treat for you. We are going to immerse ourselves in the John Truby experience. Ah, in 2004, this great subgenius troubadour sat down with Bill Cuevas, a biochemist, punk rock icon, and music director at KZSU Stanford. Oh, Bill had a show called Your Imaginary Friend, and on one episode, he shepherded his listeners through the cluttered mind of this true subgenius genius. So strap in, because you're about to discover that John Truby is about far more than just a blind man. Penis.
Are you there?
Here.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you well.
John Truby, cool. You just got off work. Sorry to...
No, that's okay. Unfortunately, songwriting does not pay enough to live on, so I do need to work in a daily job.
Yeah.
Just the nature of the music business and songwriting, and I never really seriously fooled myself to believe that I can make a living at it. I just love it so much I can't stop.
Yeah, we're talking to John Truby right now.
Leader of the band The Ugly Janitors of America. So, Bill, why don't you slam me with some questions?
Oh, questions?
Or anything you'd like to...
Well, let's talk about a little bit more about you, and because I'm not sure that the listeners are really totally familiar with you and the song poem stuff, and I'm sure you're probably really sick of going over the blind man's penis stuff.
I'll be happy about it. Go ahead. Are you talking about the blind man's song?
Yeah, the blind man's song. Well, it had a different name to begin with, right?
It was originally called Peace and Love. I'll just preface it. 1976, I was at home in Princeton, New Jersey, and I was reading the back pages of the Midnight Globe, which is a magazine sort of like the National Enquirer. And in the back pages, there was a little classified music ad that said, send your lyrics to Nashville and make $20,000 royalties. And even when I was 19 years old, I realized that was a scam and it was just some sort of ridiculous come on. So as a joke, I sat down on my dead grandfather's typewriter and I typed off the most obnoxious, obscene, idiotic lyrics I could think of off the top of my head. It talked about Stevie Wonder's private part, as well as just another stream of consciousness, weird stuff. Sent it to Nashville. I thought they'd send me a letter back telling me that I was crazy. That's really what I wanted originally. But they sent me a letter back saying, we would like to record this. Please remit $79.95 and we'll record it for you. And so the song is what you're going to play now.
Great. Okay, so here we go. This is... It's been changed to a blind man's penis.
Yes.
From Peace and Love and from Stevie Wonder's penis, because I guess I didn't want to get sued, right?
I don't know if they could sue for something like that, because celebrities, I think Ramsey Kearney was just intimidated but didn't know his legal information about that. If you can use a celebrity's name in a satirical form like that and not get sued. Ramsey Kearney was just ignorant of the law.
Here we go. This is a blind man's penis, but penned by John Truby and performed by
Ramsey Kearney.
Okay, here we go.
I got high last night on LSD. My mind was beautiful and I was free. Warts love my nipples because they are pink. Vomit on me, baby, yeah, yeah, yeah. A blind man's penis is a wreck because he is blind. It's a wreck because he is blind. A blind man's penis is a wreck because he's blind. It's a wreck because he's blind. Let's make love under the stars. Watch for UFOs. If little baby Martians come out of the UFOs, yeah, yeah, yeah. The zebra spills plastic on Venus, and the gelatin fingers lose electric arms. Ramona's titties died in hell, and the Nazis want to kill. To kill everyone. A blind man's penis is a wreck because he's blind. A blind man's penis is a wreck because he's blind. It's a wreck because
There you got it, folks. John Truby's A Blind Man's Penis. And I got John Truby speaking with us right now live on the air. You still there, John?
Yes, I'm here.
All right.
Great. Well, I'm glad you played that.
Yeah, you know, it's hilarious. You must have, not expecting to even hear back from them, and they sent you the records. You must have just crapped a brick.
Yeah, I was delighted when I first received it. They sent me a little acetate, which is like a little vinyl test pressing, which I still have in my archive somewhere. And I was so excited that I got one of my brothers, Jay, to come in and listen to it. And I remember when I was playing it to him, he started laughing. And so that's what delighted me more than anything else, is I made something that can make somebody laugh. It's in permanent form, which means I can make duplications of it and essentially get the whole world laughing. You know that song, I Started a Joke That Started the Whole World Laughing, or you know, whatever it was like that. That's what I want to do. I want to spread laughter like a virus.
I did put down a list of questions I thought I'd save to like the end when we started running out of stuff, but I tell you what, I'll pull out one of the questions. Let me see. Have you ever shaved the back of your neck?
No, absolutely not, because any undue attention made to personal appearance is unseemly for a man to do. I come from the old school where men should be brutal monsters and should just define themselves by their actions in the world rather than by how they look or their grooming or their appearance. I think that's silly. And a man should define himself by what he actually accomplishes in the world, not by how pretty he is or what clothes he wears or any of the surface attributes of his personality.
Dragging you down to the mediocrity. Dragging you down. Whoa, whoa, whoa. She demands time. It's a whoa, 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 whoa. Dragging you down in the mediocrity. Dragging you down. Whoa, whoa, whoa. A petty normal moron. Stupid, boring office job. Proud of their stability. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Dragging you down in the mediocrity. Dragging you down. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Drunken, ugly fist fights. Bloody, sick, and barbed brawls. Everyone kills everyone. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Dragging you down in the mediocrity. Dragging you down. Whoa, bitchy, snotty people, shove ahead of you and like wet and grab everything. Oh, dragging you down to the mediocrity, dragging you down. Your precious life, a dumb, stupid, boring job just to make the owners rich. Whoa, dragging you down into mediocrity, dragging you down. Whoa, dumb, worthless, bumbling, a stacking old cardboard, wasting your precious life. Whoa, dragging you down into mediocrity, dragging you down. Whoa, this is cruel managers, control freaking everyone, throw and grab everywhere. Whoa, dragging you down into mediocrity. Dragging you down. We'll be right back.
have any other questions that I can answer for you?
Actually, you know, I do have a couple other questions. Since we're on the subject...
Take your time, it's fine. I'm off work now.
Speaking of work, one of my favorite bumper stickers of all that I ever saw was "Real musicians have day jobs." Well, actually, I have a question, and my girlfriend wondered what you did for a day job. She went, "What the heck do you do?" And I said, "That's like the last thing that I'm going to ask him." But
no, that's okay. I'm ashamed to talk about my day job, but if it will make your girlfriend happy, then I want to do that because you're making me happy by talking. So it's a circle of happiness here.
Yes.
I work in a call center where we sell home warranty coverage. It's not the greatest job in the world, but it's not the worst job in the world. The reason I'm here is it's the least painful job I've ever had, because I've been in jobs where I've had people screaming at me. I've worked in minimum wage jobs where I could barely afford to live. I've had periods of unemployment and crawled through the gutter. Mm. So I know all that stuff. So a nice, safe job where there's not a lot of office politics nonsense
nice. Is
very important to me. I'm making okay money, not great money, but enough to just live decently and
fund
some of my projects.
Yeah.
And it's just in the call center here. So ironically enough, for the guy that's known as a prank phone caller, I make my living doing phone calls.
I was going to say, so you're in a call center. That's beautiful. So let's back up here a second. I'm talking to John Truby, and he's a famous prankster, phone caller, songwriter, musician, poet, anti-poet, as it's called. And he's talking to us live from Santa Rosa and talking to us about his art. Well, speaking of which, let's talk about those prank phone calls that you do. They're pretty famous, at least in my sphere. And you know what? Why?
Okay.
They're really. I'll just tell you, they're uncomfortable for me to listen to.
A lot of people have that same reaction. Why? Why are they uncomfortable for you?
I just wonder how would I feel? You know, just
right.
I'm not saying it's bad. Believe me.
Oh no. Well, I would agree. They are bad. It isn't right. It isn't. It violates social taboos. We work in a society where I have a social contract. We trust that what we say to another person is truthful. And so, calling up a stranger on the phone and flinging out a BS to them is not, it violates the social contract.
Cases of wine. We do have only cases of tough time. Thanks to you, the little children leaked on this road.
I don't do them anymore. We have a caller ID now, as well as I'm a little more mature and sedate, and I have other forms of amusement. I made tons of those tapes when I was in the, back in the 70s as a teenager, and I've subsequently duped them. They've been on record albums. They're available for download on the Internet. A lot of people have heard them. They just get out there like a virus. Best way I can defend them is it's just a it was a form of recreation or amusement as a teenager. About the most extreme form of rebellion I had, I was very repressed. My parents were very strict. I always adhered to the rules. So this is one my one little form of rebellion. I never got any high school girls pregnant. I didn't experiment a lot with drugs. So this is my silly form of rebellion at the time. Your reaction of being uncomfortable listening to them is not uncommon, and other people have expressed the same thing because they do violate the social contract. And I can't really defend the prank phone calls other than that they were a form of entertainment. Other people now find them amusing. About the only good or positive aspect of the prank phone call tapes, especially the recordings now, is that since people would find it very intimidating to make prank phone calls now with Star 69 and caller ID and that sort of thing, about the only way to experience them is to listen to recordings of prank phone calls that were made before those things existed.
And I must thank you for doing the prank phone calls as a teenager instead of like shooting up the high school or something like that with the AK-47.
Right, and in fact, I think that's the reason people do shoot up high schools and things like that.
Your parents, so smug and comfortable, nestled in your bourgeois blanket, consumer infant world, snuggled bugs in Eddie Bauer, drool saliva sweet, got your blanket, here's your hanky, now snort out all your snot. I stand atop the highest mountain, I sleep beneath the deepest sea, I crawl across eternal deserts in my struggle to be free. No more ninnies, accomplish nothing to fit in with the crowd. No more ninnies, aspire to blandness and shop for plastic crap. I guess the world needs normal ninnies to watch crappy TV shows. I guess the world needs normal ninnies to stink up all the air. I stand atop the highest mountain, I sleep beneath the deepest sea. I crawl across eternal deserts in my struggle to be free. Out window shopping, got no crappy brains at all. They shop for crap and eat the plastic. TV is their all. Emote and whimper like weakling babies, afraid to be alone. Life is easy when you're a plastic ninny who worships money, mobs, and rules. I stand atop the highest mountain, I sleep beneath the deep sea, I crawl across eternal deserts in my struggle to be free. Yeah.
think that's the reason people do shoot up high schools and things like that, because they lack a sense of humor. Perhaps the reason that people do outrageous things or do things that cause other people harm, first of all, they lack a sense of humor to put themselves in perspective and look at how tiny they are in context of the whole universe. And when you realize how tiny you are, you don't want to blow it by destroying yourself or destroying others or putting yourself in jail for the rest of your life, because what precious little time you have is very small compared to the rest of the universe, so you want to use it productively and in a joyful manner rather than being behind bars or ending it prematurely. And that goes for people sometimes that do away with themselves. They're not looking at things in the greater perspective and they're lacking a sense of humor.
Moments appear
But, you know, if we back up a bit, I was reading some literature on you. Turns out you went to Berklee School of Music, which is usually associated with, you know, kind of humorless impresarios. But it kind of, also in a sort of, something clicked and made sense, because when I listen to your other music, certain names come to mind, and one is Frank Zappa. And that man definitely knew what we're talking about here, about having a sense of humor. And
sure. Well, when it got time to go to college, I was in a depressed state of mind, because I looked at all the occupations in the world, and they all looked grim and awful. I mean, sitting in an office shuffling paper, or being some business honcho, and all the political stuff that goes on in jobs. And the only thing that really fascinated me was stuff in the creative arts, music or film. And I decided against film, because when you're making a movie, generally you have to go begging people for money, and it irks my pride to ever beg anybody for anything. And also with a film, generally you have to assemble a crew of people. And I'm generally very asocial. I like to spend a lot of time alone. So if you're a composer, you can, or a songwriter, you can spend a lot of time alone just writing music or practicing guitar or assembling music on your own. So I chose the path of going to music college, went to Berklee. It's a very demanding school. It's very intense. In Boston, you're essentially slotted into one subject, various forms of music, for 4 years. And a lot of people drop out. A lot of musicians don't have the money to keep on going there. I was lucky in that my parents could pay to send me there, so I sort of lucked out that way. And I just pursued it and learned all this music-related stuff. Zappa, I listened to a lot of Zappa music when I was growing up. As a teenager in the 70s, I really admired his music. He did a lot of great music. He did a lot of music that's not really so great. I love Hot Rats, Uncle Meat, Weasels Rip My Flesh. I can't stand stuff like Joe's Garage or Thing Fish or The Man from Utopia. And so I would qualify my interest in Zappa's music. I enjoy his music. I don't like all of his music, and I think any Zappa fan who unabashedly admires everything that Zappa's done and think they ought to be required to listen repeatedly to the album Thing Fish over and over for a period of about 3 days, and then watch the movie Uncle Meat, see that for a period of 3 days, and then see what they say about Mr. Zappa's talent. Mr. Zappa has great talent, but he's also very self-indulgent. He can be sort of a abusive control freak. That's how geniuses operate sometimes, and sometimes it's not very pretty. So, and also about his music, I think it's more important to pay attention to his music than to idolize him as a person. What is important is what he left behind, but it really doesn't matter what I or anybody else thinks of it, and who he is as a person. That he left behind a lot of really great music, which I enjoy listening to.
You're saying like not idolizing the person, but listening to their music. And
That's what defines what he did. He created all this beautiful music, and that's essentially the meaning and value of his life, is that he created all this wonderful music. But in order to do it, he had to be a strict band leader. He wasn't always the nicest person from reports that I've heard. That's okay. I don't know him personally. It's nothing to do with me, but I'm just glad he left behind all this great music. But then what happened is, at a certain point in my life, I used to collect a lot more albums, records that I did now, and also I was working day jobs, and I only had so much time and resources. So I said, well, do I want to listen to other people's music, or do I prefer to make my own? And it's much, much more exciting to make music on your own. It's the difference between watching a porno movie or making love yourself. So that's why I prefer to make music myself. It's much more fun to make it rather than to just listen to it, I can tell you.
Desert climes of pear blossom, California. smashing all clocks and all timepieces, and especially the time clocks, and especially the time clocks. I smash the time clocks, damn it. And I shall run free and naked and free, like a hippie.
Yeah, we're talking to John Truby right now.
Leader of the band The Ugly Janitors of America. Another thing, back in the 60s and 70s, sex was something that was regarded as something that was playful and fun and desirable. And nowadays, based on what I read in the newspapers and media and so forth, sex is something that's demonized and scary and that causes AIDS, dreadful and horrible, while there's several decades ago, sex was something that was cool and exciting and fun and something that you'd want and you want to lose your virginity and things like that. Sex is the way it's always been. It's just that human attitude, sociological behaviors change over time, and it's very strange to watch these things over a period of time change and how there's a sort of sense of mass hysteria or madness just based on what people popularly believe or how they view things just based on how they observe other people doing things. I think sex is still desirable, it's still cool, and it's exciting, and no amount of the risk of AIDS or Dr. Laura's rules or all the swill in the media about negativity associated with will ever change it. It's just terrible that too many people buy into that, you know.
Yeah, you got all these people teaching abstinence and
I mean, talking about pranks, here would be a funny prank. You know that most guys want to engage in carnal behavior. I want to avoid the potty mouth stuff, so I'll use a euphemism and call it carnal behavior, okay?
Yeah.
Okay. It's a taken that most guys enjoy carnal behavior and want to engage in carnal behavior. So I think it's funny to go to high schools and preach not to do something that people naturally want to do. And also I think it's very humorous when I'm 85 years old and look really wretched to go around to high schools in my retirement and make up a bunch of abstinence pamphlets and go to high schools to give free lectures to brag that I'm still a virgin even though I'm 85 years old. that would scare the hell out of all those teenage boys, so they would go the opposite direction, and it would make a mockery of all this obnoxious anti-sex attitudes we have from all quarters.
you would hope so.
I think that'd be funny as hell. I'd really love to do that.
That's a great idea, but the cynic in me makes me think that they would... That you'd be like this example to them, and they would actually believe it or something. I don't know.
Wouldn't that be creepy?
It's beautiful.
Creepy to have this decrepit old man going around bragging that he's still waiting for the right woman.
Well, isn't there like an entire legion of men, like known as Catholic priests, that are already doing that?
Yeah, but you see, the carnal aspect has already come out in other aspects.
Right.
I went to a prep school many years ago. And one of the things, something that stuck with me for ages, the three basic metaphors in life that you have to deal with are blood, the metaphor of blood, which is that pain. You have to deal with pain and suffering because that's given in life. You have to deal with the sex urge. Sex is something that's always there. And you have to deal with death, you know, the three heavy things we have to deal with. And what's happening in some of these religious organizations or cults, they try to control sex, or they say, you know, don't do it, but... Sex is like a flower that's coming through the cracks in the concrete. It's like life itself. It's the will of life itself. It has to come up to the sunlight. And if you try to tamp it down, it will just come out in other ways. Yeah, and I think, you know, it's a part of the times. We live in a time that's very humorless. It's just sort of depressing because I was a kid in the 60s and the 70s. People were more laid back and a little more relaxed and casual. And now it's almost as if we're living in the 50s where nobody has a sense of humor and there's road rage and people want to do harm to each other and they all have a chip on their shoulder.
Stupid friends hang on the corner. Your stupid friends carry on now, like they're still back in junior high. Soap opera intrigue and empty gossip take the place of a real life. I would have treated you nice, but you acted as cold as ice. And then I saw you drunk at the bar.
Yeah, we're talking to John Truby right now. You're living in Santa Rosa these days.
Huh? That's correct. I had to escape from L.A. because I just got sick of living in L.A., and it's real pretty up here. I moved up here in 1992 with no job and no place to live and just got off the bus with three suitcases, and I built my life up again, and it was very painful, but it was necessary to. By the way, I'd just like to leave the brief contact information. John Truby, T-R-U-B-E-E, P.O. Box, 4921, Santa Rosa, California, 95402. Also, you've heard that saying that laughter helps to bolster your immune system.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, many people laugh as a result of these silly recordings I made years ago. So if I can bolster people's immune systems to help ward off cancer or any other diseases they might get, then that's my positive contribution to society. And I think on a cellular level, below the level of being a socialized human being, on a cellular level, your body doesn't really care that some of the stuff you laugh about is not socially acceptable. Your cells of your body just knows that it feels good to laugh, and it boosts the immune system. Even though some of the things we laugh at may not be socially acceptable, I think it's really important to laugh nonetheless, even at things that are considered dark humor or black humor or maybe socially taboo. It's important to laugh. It's essential to life, and I think humor is probably right below freedom and then health. Very important to have freedom and then health and then maybe humor. Somewhere music. Music is somewhere there, too.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. Sometimes I think people who don't have a sense of humor are like robots or something. I feel really sorry for them. And,
right.
And thanks a lot. And I'm going to play Punch Me Again, You Drunken Idiot.
Great. The inspiration behind that, by the way, was I was doing a poetry rant. I had blood covered all over me, and I was hitting a baby doll with an adult marital aid.
Oh, nice.
And some guy in the audience, some drunk and rowdy on a Friday night, didn't like what I was doing, and he started screaming at me from the audience, came on stage and started punching me. On stage.
Really?
And attacked me physically. As I had this fake blood on my t-shirt and I was hitting the baby doll with a marital aid, and he was somehow disturbed by that, and as a result he was drunk at the time and he started hitting people. He was hitting girls in the audience, and eventually we called the San Francisco Police Department and they ejected him, and I probably got off scot-free.
Well, hey, let's play it. Want to play it?
Great.
And I'm going to play Punch Me Again, You Drunken Idiot.
Thank you.
questions I can answer for you?
Actually, you know, I do have a couple other questions. Just really quick.
There's no hurry. This is the most important and fun thing I've done in ages.
What do you feel is mankind's most redeeming quality?
Humor and music.
Yeah.
And joy and self-replication through the act of carnal fusing. By the way, besides all my yak, the other ones, I'm not obsessed with sex. I'm more obsessed with music, actually. And if you gave me a choice between the two, I would choose music. I mean, music is the greatest high, and it's most fun. And when you consider the payoff and what you have to go through in order to get either, music is much, much more fun, I'm telling you.
What do you feel is the best excuse for total nuclear annihilation of the human race?
That they don't treat me the way that I want to be treated. I've been disappointed by human beings more than once, and we need humor to keep us from going on a rampage and even annihilating all of humanity. One of my good friends, Zugs Rift, a band leader, is a famous misanthrope, but it takes too much energy to hate people and hate mankind, so if you have problems with it, with them, just be a hermit and sort of stay away and do your own thing.
Right on. On that note, okay, John Truby, it's been really great talking to you.
Great, thank you very much.
And one last thank you to you, John Truby.
Great, thank you.
Ah, Seekers, yes. You're listening to WREK Atlanta. But that was Bill Cuevas interviewing John Truby in 2004 for the KZSU Stanford show, Your Imaginary Friend. Bill is also a West Coast punk rock icon and a biochemist, a fitting interviewer for the polydidactic John Truby. All the music tonight has been by John Truby in his various incarnations as himself. Luke Knox and the Stick People, and John Truby and the Ugly Janitors of America. Truby's primarily known for Blind Man's Penis, but oh, he has been about so much more, Seekers. John Truby's musical ballads contain the cri de coeur of our collective subgenius soul. If you'd like more information, John Truby is incredibly forthcoming, but he's shy. You've got to pin him down. He gave out his current address on the show, but that address and his email link can be found at johntruby.com. That's JohnTrubee. Thank you so much, John, and thank you, Bill. Oh, good night, Seekers.